I have a sister, and her name is Francesca. There are only 14 months between us, and she is the older one. So we practically grew up together in a devout Catholic family. We spend hours and hours playing together, going out visiting our relatives, the friends of our parents. Up to the eighth grade, we even played the same musical instrument, we played the same sport, and we attended the same school. Obviously, when adolescence hit, we started to develop different interests, to make different friends, and so our lives became more independent. However, the fraternal bond between us remained unchanged. That's why what happened on an evening when we were in our late teens was something strange for me. As I said, we grew up in a Catholic family, and I don't know exactly why, but every now and then I would go and attend the daily mass at a close by church. And so that evening I was leaving home to go to church, and on my way out I met my sister and said, "Do you want to come with me to mass?" Her answer was a mix of wonder and disappointment at me. She told me, "Paolo, do you realize that I don't believe in anything anymore? If I go to church, if I come along for Mass on a Sunday, it's only because I don't want to upset our parents and I don't want to fight with them. There is nothing interesting or entertaining about church for me. If I want to see real actors, I will go to the theater rather than to Mass, where the priest acts as an actor." That day, I realized that I didn't really know my sister as well as I should. But when I read the parable that we just read, I can't help but thinking about that conversation I had with my sister. Just as my sister that day couldn't find anything appealing about coming to Mass with me, so similarly, those invited to the wedding feast of the king's son replied that they had better things to do. One went to his farm, another to his business, and so on. Many people, especially young people today, find our Christian life unappealing. They find much more solace and interest in worldly things. How to reproach them for that? After all, what the world has to offer in terms of entertainment is much better than what we have to offer. What is striking in the parable today is that if you read it on a superficial level, you would think that the king invited random people to his son's wedding. He invited random people, seemingly, to be there and to be the cheering crowd for the spouses, and maybe, meantime, they could enjoy some cool cocktail and good food. But is this really what the parable is about? I would suggest this is not the case. First of all, where is the bride? We know who the groom is, the king's son, but there's no trace of the bride. There's no even a mention of her. And then we hear that when the feast started, the king came in and saw a man without the wedding garment, and he asked him, "Friend, how is it that you came in without a wedding garment. He's not just questioning him because he came in unbecomingly dressed. He specifically asks, "Where is your wedding garment?" So these two details, the seeming absence of the bride and the question about the wedding garment, provide us the key to interpret the text correctly. These two details indicate that the guests are not invited to the wedding feast to be mere standbyers, bystanders, I guess, and spectators, or to have an enjoyable evening. No, the bride is not mentioned because the guests are meant to be the bride of the king's son. The reason why the king rebukes the guest and casts him out of the wedding feast is that though he was supposed to participate and stand in the wedding as the bride, he was provided with the wedding garment, but he wasn't wearing it. This indicates that at the wedding feast of the Son of God, we are meant to be protagonists. We are invited to stand as the bride of Christ, as members of the church. The feast is to be the celebration of our love between us and Christ. If we understand our Christian life merely as the source of cheap enjoyment, entertainment, and the source of good feelings to feel good about ourselves, something that we passively receive just by showing up at church, no wonder that we will not find ourselves to be satisfied, that we will find ourselves at the margin of this feast, and ultimately we will be found unprepared for it. No wonder that we will find more effective avenues to meet our expectations for good feelings and for fun. Today's world has already mastered and perfected this art. But what the world cannot provide is satisfaction for our deepest desires, for our hunger for meaning, for fulfillment, for purpose, and ultimately our desire for infinite love. The world simply cannot provide all this. But if we understand our Christian adventure as the lifelong love story between God and us, that engages the totality of our person, mind, will, feelings, all of what we are and have, something that requires our active pursuit of Christian life, then our approach to the feast and to our whole life will radically change. You know, we were at our baptism, we were betrothed to Christ, and we elected our Lord to be the ultimate recipient of our self-gift, of all our love. He too chose us and bestowed upon us the pledge of his love, which is indicated in the parable by the white garment. This represents his life of grace in us. And he wants us to preserve this garment unstained for the day of the wedding. On that day, this mutual love will find its crowning and its consummation. Our life down here is a preparation for that day, for the day of the wedding. So today, I believe, is a good occasion for us to ask our Lord for the grace of a new conversion of the heart, that he may give us right vision and conviction about what it means to be Christians, that the various events and circumstances of our life may become many occasions to receive God's love and to return love for love, to demonstrate to him that everything we look for and want of our faith is not fun, is not emotional support, but just his love. This grace of continual conversion that we should ask for today, and for this right vision that makes this kind of love for us possible, is a precious and a rare one, but God does grant it if we ask it with perseverance. I mentioned my sister in the beginning. Her name was Francesca. Her name now is Sister Maria Francesca. Few years after her statement of atheism, so to say, she received the grace of conversion, which I believe was obtained through the prayers of my parents, because I wasn't really praying for that at that time. She started to take seriously her relationship of love with Christ and ended up embracing a life of virginity for the sake of Christ, the bridegroom. But don't let this deceive you, because this kind of love, life of love for Christ, is not something reserved to friars, sisters, priests, monks. No, it's for all the baptized ones. Christ has given to all of us the wedding garment on the day of our baptism, the pledge of his love to keep unstained until the day we will meet him in heaven. It's up to us now, here on earth, to return to him love for love, so as to be found ready, prepared, and becomingly dressed for the final wedding.